see this dog targets very well to the previous dog by Rudiger and Rishab, because they look much more at the sociological and motivation part, maybe more economic things, and this is more the technical part on it. I think the Canucks project looks more the political part, so I think there are three visions of the same thing. So that's maybe the interest of this talk. I changed my slides yesterday when I saw what the vision here in the group is. So I took out most of the technical things out to make maybe more theoretical work. So I think this might interest you. I think if you've got questions, please raise your hands. So I'm gonna talk in English because I think there are some people who only understand English. I don't know if that's from. Okay. So that's the index of my talk. I think if you're talking about an alternative view, we should explain why we want an alternative. Or really speaking, about what now exists and why we think this is not wrong, but gives us not the whole possibilities of what we want. So the first part of this talk is points. I will talk about the software crisis and about traditional, I say always about what we say is software engineering nowadays. And afterwards, I'll explain the new focus, which is maybe not so new, but we'll see why free software makes that focus very interesting. And then I explain, I have several slides, but I go very fast through it because that's the main part of our work at university. Probably 90% of the talk, of the work, but only 10% of the talk, because it's more technically, probably to give you an idea of what we do and how our work is targeted. And last, conclusions and questions. So I'll start with this slide I've taken from the FLOSS workshop two weeks ago. Since the beginning of software, there is a term called the software crisis. The term is the people are friends from their hardware. They every 1.5 years they make a processor that doubles its speed, that has the double of memory, and okay, we get every 2 years a new machine that is much better than the one we had before. The problem is this doesn't really happen with software. I think we use the software we used 3 years ago. It's maybe old software, but that improvement is not the same as in hardware. It's interesting to see that maybe the term software is 40 years old and software crisis is almost also 40 years old. So software and software crisis are related terms from the beginning. There are some numbers to figure out how what we are talking about. I think in the US, that's €500 billion spent in software projects. The national product of Spain, of the country like Spain. So it's a pretty amount of money spent in software. And only 20% of the project succeeded. I mean, this percentage is maybe rather low because it's the projects that are in time and in budget. And that's one of the problematics of software engineering is we can't say in advance how much time we will spend on developing the project and how much money do we have to invest in it. Maybe the interesting amount of money is this one, the €95 billion over the years, €550 billion. I mean, it's a lot of money. If we do a small improvement in software engineering and we save that money, it's a big improvement. We can see that only 1% of the success rate grows 1% when it's a lot of money. So, when talking about traditional software engineering, we usually talk about groups and people like this. Brooks has a paper, a very important paper, the most silver bullet, the sense of accidents in software engineering, and he says that it's, I think, 20 years are old, and that paper says that he doesn't see any technology or any advance in the developing techniques that makes us improve one order of magnitude in the software thing. Let's say that what hardware people do every 2 years, that for software he says that's almost impossible. And when he said that 20 years ago, there wasn't any object-oriented programming, not that languages that we have today, no semi-automatic tools, formal methods. I mean, in this 20, nobody here would say that software engineering hasn't done anything in 20 years, but this rule, this law is true nowadays. On the other side, Brooks criticized software engineering, but he gave the way we should go to solve the problem. He gave 3 hints, and we add a 4th hint. That's maybe the first step of the alternative vision. The first one is very interesting for programmers. It's just buy, don't construct. I mean, if you're a programmer, the best thing you can do is not program at all, which is something not very usual for the rest of the world. The other two things, fast prototyping, incremental construction, and finding great designers. I mean, that are software engineering theories for long years. And maybe the last point, Brooks didn't talk about it, but the added is you have to connect knowledge about the software we do and how we do it. The next slide is pretty interesting because Brooks didn't know about free software for that time, and it's strange, but it's like he was talking about it. No? Because buy and don't program, okay, let's use code from other people. The great designers are maybe done in free software binary or small groups, like the DOS team reported before that there's a small core group that makes a full amount of work on free software. And then our point is just automated experience. It's interesting because free software is not only a license, it's not only a legal issue, it's only a form of developing or a form of living, as people say. So it's interesting that there's a lot of information, and we can see at that information that is something new which we could do before in small size, and now we can do in this gigabytes of code. So far we've seen the software crisis in both, because it's related to software. So software and software crisis may be the same. The silver bullet law, the receipt from Brooks to overcome the silver bullet bar. And now we'll see the alternative model. I think we've talked a lot, or we've discussed a lot in my university about an analogy to express what we want to do. And we found a good analogy in economics. I'm not an economist, so maybe I'm not totally right with what I say, but I think the main idea is the important thing. So some time ago, there was somebody studying economics, 200 years ago, and then he knew, okay, there's some harvest, richness, prices, money, and that components work together. In a relatively dark way, or a not compressive way, but they did work together. I mean, this was Adam Smith 200 years ago, and he said, okay, if I sell tomatoes for 5 euros and somebody 10 meters away sells tomatoes for 4 euros, I won't sell tomatoes. And okay, and he made a theory, and he called it a black hand. Nowadays, we call the black hand, we call it market. And I think everybody of us has an idea of what market is. We're not economists, but we know something called market, and it has its behavior, and we can understand it better or worse, but we have the idea of market. I think economists can do with market a lot of things. They have lots of measures who are only understood by economists, but sometimes these numbers are important for our lives. So I think this is the analogy when talk with software. I think today we have thought a lot of software things around what is really software. We've thought object-oriented programming, pattern, documentation, methodologies. This is rather high abstraction. Sometimes when talking about software engineering, it's like talking about psychology or talking about work, groups working together, or philosophy with abstraction. It's more, I would say, more psychology or philosophy than engineering at all. Well, that's what software engineering is today. Yeah, there are more ideas about work, group work and teamwork and so on than what we want. I want to call this black hand, I would call it magic, because everybody of us, when they talk about how free software works, then they start saying, oh, 10 years ago, somebody in Finland called Linus Torvalds did blah, 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 you know all the story, and through the internet and blah, 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 and it sounds like magic. I think it's one of the things why we develop free software, is because it's something about magic. The problem is, magic is very nice, but for software engineers, you have to explain that, or you have to at least understand it to make it repeatable. You have to take a success, and you know, aha, this works because of ABC, and if I make these three steps, then I get another success. That has nothing to do with magic. That's maybe one of the things we say with this type of software engineering is, we want to put magic out of software to understand it better. So that was our analogy. And I think the 3 points about reverse software engineering is, we can do that because we've got a lot of information that free software developers give us. It's information they give us because they work giving away information so that people can join the project, so that they can develop faster, so that they can do free software. One of the points is that many people complain, okay, you want to do something new to save the world. And I think, no, this is not something new. This is maybe another view of software engineering that is totally complementary to the actual, to the current view of software engineering. I mean, that things that I explained earlier about psychology or object-oriented, or that's totally complementary to this view. Maybe the main target is to have experience, to have evidences, to know, this works like this, we want to know that this works like this and this, it is a success, or at least a success sometimes, and we want to reuse it in our projects. Another question is if this is new. I think this isn't new. Measures and metrics are known for 30 years yet. The problem is we couldn't apply it to that extent that we want because of proprietary software. I mean, if you download Microsoft, you don't know how many source lines of code this operating system has. But you can do it with Debian. So sometimes, I mean, we have studied the length or the size of Debian, and we know, okay, it's 30 million lines, but we can compare it with proprietary software. This has measuring and metrics that have been used in proprietary software, also in other projects, mainly in the NASA, or that's the capability maturity model, but always in a small size. We want to do it in big, because we can. And that's only possible with free software. That's maybe the main idea of this talk. And, okay,
I think the main... it wasn't done because of these four things. You know,
commercial secrets, nobody wants to give out the source codes, closed working groups, etc. Okay, the advantage of having so much information and analyzing it in comparison to the other ways is, the first one, you have a temporal perspective. That means you can measure how a project grows. You can measure how methodologies work and compare them in the past and now. And you can do it in free software for 5, 6, even 8 years ago for ESD, for example. Second promise, no granularity problems. A lot of metrics are based on few projects, let's say 20 in the NASA. We can do something like a micro-analysis for all the free software. We can do micro-analysis for, let's say, a project like Evolution, is the mail reader in GNOME. And we can compare Evolution with in GNOME, or Evolution with free software, or GNOME with the rest of free software. Or interesting is GNOME and KDE, or Apache and Linux. I mean, the way they work is maybe different, but and it doesn't mean one project succeeds because of these things. But at least if we have got data, we can see, there's an evidence that these people work that way and that they have success, and these people don't do it that way and they also have success. I need to point out, Kokomo is a model that taking the source lines of codes, it makes an approach of the time you have to spend on this project and how much it will cost. We have measured Debian and GNOME. I mean, GNOME was 5 million lines of codes. KDE was, I think, sort of like that. And then you just take the formula and you have got the input, which is the lines of code, and you get, billions of dollars, or billions of euros. I think this model, who was done 20 years ago in the NASA, is maybe quite interesting for proprietary software, but not for free software. It would be interesting to know, in GNOME, it lasted 5 years because we know GNOME started 5 years ago. So many developers work in GNOME, and then we can know in the future how many developers or at what rate free software will grow. But maybe an easy metric, but there are other metrics. More thing. This is very useful because it's economic, but there are other technical metrics that could be used.
I think the second part of the advantages is quite clear.
If you can measure something, normally you measure to compare things. If one thing gives 3 and one gives 4, then you can say, okay, 4 is better than 3, then this technology should be better, or this developing methodology is better, and so on. Maybe for the economics group, it's interesting to... These two lines are more interesting. Because if you have got technical measures about how people organize themselves, the model of how a project works, if it's really a democracy or not, that are such type of things you can measure, really technically measure.
And the economics people are more the people who analyze that data and who see, I think this is, from the sociological point of view, because of this reason, and
about the GPL society and so on. Okay, there are also some disadvantages. The first one is you are just starting. And usually when starting things, we don't know much about what we are studying. So we don't know where we are going and what it will be. Maybe in 5 years everybody will talk about it, or maybe in 5 years nobody will know about it and you'll forget all this talk. So the first problem is there are nowadays no good measuring tools. That's probably because there was few interest in measuring software. Usually companies wanted to or develop software to earn money. And measuring software is either targeted to earn more money, not to make software better. It's not the first attempt. So I think that's methods. Source lines of code is a very used method, and it's really not that good, right? Because a program can have 1,000 lines of code, and that doesn't mean it's better than a program that has 500 lines of code. I would rather say a program that has less lines of code is better than a program that has more lines of code, because then you have to look up at less code, and it's easier. So that's maybe one important question. Nowadays, one disadvantage, because we don't know how we are going to do it. And the last point, it's very interesting, is, okay, maybe you've got a good way of measuring software, and you've got results, but then you don't know what to do with the results. It's like, I get a graph, and okay, it's beautiful, but I can look at it, but it doesn't say anything to me. Or I can extract any further information to me. So that's now not our biggest problem, but I think in the future will be the biggest problem. So this rather technical thing, knowing the analysis, is different. Right? So we are going to talk about, I'm going to talk about our work. Maybe when I talk about free software, I'm not talking only about source code. I'm talking also about the ways developers exchange information, the way they work, and other things. Our idea is to have here an independent format to store the data. I'll talk about that later. I'm not going to go in detail, I only have a slight idea. I mean, about source code, I've already talked about, there's a tool called Slockfound, who has source lines of code. And out from it, you can get, with the Kokomo model, if you're interested, I can give you some links, and you can see what this Kokomo model gives for Debian, for Linux, or for GNOME, and you can see, it's a lot of money, but I think, I think you could say the half of it, or one-tenth of it, and it would say the same to us. Our program is that was part of the FLOSS study. It makes owner grip with authors and much more. And there are then a lot of, I would say, different software metrics like functions, function points, half speed, or output-oriented metrics, with there are a lot of them with different points of view and for different targets. Maybe the information exchange is something many people would argue there is no really information in it, but there is. I mean, in mailing lists, I don't have participation because there are a lot of people who only participate once in a mailing list. Maybe more, very interesting in that is the people who say, I want to be involved, and then you never hear about them. So that's probably a problem in the project about new people. We want always new people joining in our project, and if the rate of the people who say, I want to be involved, but doesn't get involved, then it's got a problem. The second point is, I think email reading is part of developing. I guess Linus Torvalds reads about 2 hours every day his email, or more.
and Arnkoch's the same. So the documentation that we have in traditional software development is maybe done here by email. So it's interesting to have a list and see, so many messages. You need 1 minute to read 3 lines of the message, and you need 1 minute to write 1 line. So you can see how much time people spend reading and writing this email. And maybe in the Floss survey, when we ask people how much time do you spend developing software, they didn't answer, they didn't add the reading and writing mails, because that's, they have got the idea that's really not developing. But I think that should be part of developing, and it should be measured. From the IRC, that's very difficult. I'm not sure if we can get much data from it. Interesting is, the comments, number of lines change and the growth, because actually you can see how free software evolves. And you can see it in Norman's 4 years ago, in other projects, much more time. So you can really track a project nowadays from a long time ago. And that's very interesting, because there you can start to see how the interactions are, how many people joined the project, how many people left the project, and so on. Another interesting thing is with the bugs. We always talk about, or Raymond talked a lot about, that open source is really efficient with bug fixing. Okay, let's measure that. We've got Bugzilla, where bugs are announced in a lot of projects, and let's see how much time these bugs are open, what happens with the bugs, and so on and so on. So there are other sources that may be important. I mean, that's not primary data, but that makes probably the whole picture. And this, all sources, it would be interesting to have an intermediate and independent format to have that. To have it stored in XML or SQL, so that you can achieve these things, that it's human readable, extensible, and easy to transform to other formats. It's interesting to have this type, because somebody wants to analyze the data, and it's okay, then you have the data over there, and you can do with the data what you want. So it's interesting to have it ready for being used, and for people with ideas, or with, let's say, bright ideas, to know that no, I want to do that with the data. So, and then this here, I mean, our work is now here with the tools extracting, and this one, and I think the next step is probably the most difficult with the analysis. That's this part. And I see it will be, we do today analysis, but we do it not usually from one source. We take the information and we analyze. We don't correlate. So it would be interesting in the future to have this third step and to have flexibility to do. So analysis, this slide is pretty small, because there's not much work today. I mean, statistical analysis is a, we are starting to make some cluster analysis, which could be interesting. And then maybe one interesting thing is all the tools we are doing, we want to have a package for them, so that people can download them and measure their own projects. And it's interesting, because we are doing a tool for measuring CVEs. So you have a project with a CVEs and repository, and you download it, you put it with, as a web interface, you can see, this, I've done 20% of my project, and contributions of other projects, and you can export the data, you can see the data, and so on. I think it's a sort of getting the community involved in our research, and that the community gets feedback from this research and improves the way that software. So the conclusions is here, we want to do
a methodical analysis of software development that usually couldn't be done because of proprietary software practices. Another point is that the software has inherent characteristics to break Brooks' silver bullet law. And then the point about knowledge acquisition and software generation of knowledge acquisition, the nature of software, which was the dark cloud, the magic in my picture. And maybe the more important thing for the OpenX project, and I think most targeted to do, is results that give further insight into socio-economic and political questions that usually the software points to. So that was my presentation at FOTA. Yep. This was an international conference. Thank you for your attention. Any questions about it? I think I've put out in
all the sources, from SourceWatch, the number of downloads, I didn't think about Google, but it would be interesting to see what comes out.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. I think it's a good idea. Yes, please.
You said a scheme for the paper, just before that, you analyze
it. Yeah, it's this picture.
Well, the analysis to be used, so that was completed there, and that's for the other parallel. And this huge paper in the format, you say that the next kind of format, which is going to describe code, it's going to describe memories, IC, download.
It's something we're discussing about now. I mean,
probably the format is even, you are now at this point, and the format is very important.
We don't know how to take so much information and make it, let's say, usable. Because, I mean, the information is over there also. But we want to, in a way, we can use it easy and in a fast way. So, problem about the format, I think it's not solved. It will probably never be solved 100%, but we want to make the first steps in that direction. And I think XML and SQL is probably the best things we have today. So I don't know any other technical way to do that better than that. So it's a thing I think it's not one of our problems, but it's more technological related than for this study. But it will be surely an interesting way to see that stuff. Sorry? We haven't considered that. I mean, all the RDFs are basically all the idea on XML. So, yeah, I mean, there are pros and contras for extent.
XML RDF is a representation of graph in XML format.
I think that's
a lot of work to be done here. That's the main idea we're working with.
And I can assure. I mean, if we do it in XML, when to have format conversers in other things. I think psychologists use SPSS, and that should be also possible. So sometimes maybe the Swiss format would be not the best. But it will be easy to have the conversion. So you have to see also that's maybe also an engineering problem. What we want, what resources we have, and what is the best we can get out of it.
So what is the
right now, I would say, you know, summarize, this tools here, they are almost done or partly done.
Yeah, the collection.
But they are in that. So there has to be done work here in the intermediate format that we talked about. And probably when merging all the information, we should add other information like Google hits and so on. So I think between step one and step two. And analysis is still exist, but I think this is a step in 2 or 3 years. I don't see, I can see now here the different format, so I can see what we are going to do next in this program.
Earlier, is the problem is analysis is very difficult. I mean, that's why there are so many tools, and with every tool you make your own analysis. I think it would be interesting to make correlations. And probably when you bring correlations and having more knowledge, then you will know, I want to measure that thing I didn't do before because I didn't know. So that's maybe interesting thing of beginning. We have to see the evolution, and we have to see, I get this data, so it's maybe interesting to have this other data. But we can say in advance, this data was interesting. So it's an interesting question. I hope to answer it in a couple of years or more. I think it's for a long term. I think you asked a question.
Yeah, what are you heading with? Do you want to prove the rules of law, or are you learning as well why?
The problem is, this, what I call magic, is very big. It's probably more difficult in free software than in proprietary software, because you know in your company how many people are working, how much time they spend, if they are motivated, if they aren't. So the problem is how to attack this.
But you are measuring the speed of magic, you're looking inside of magic.
Yeah, but by measuring magic, or by measuring that what you don't know, you're starting to know something. I mean, now it's magic only. But if you, it's the first step to measure something, or at least from my engineering point of view. Psychologists have another point of view, and probably from the political point of view there are other interests. Yeah, but I mean, our main focus is saying, this is faster than that. That's made probably yet. We see this is faster, but usually, I mean, as software developers, you have background idea or background thing. Why this is faster? Because you want to repeat it. And if you want to repeat it, you always think, why? The problem is, knowing that, I think it's better to measure it. and then you can discuss. I mean, measuring is quite very interesting because you have got data, and they are right or wrong, but they are data. Discussions are more, that's my opinion, and that's your opinion, and we can discuss, but that's... Yes. Okay. Oh yes. Yes, please. So, because I don't know if you were next or somebody in my working group has, because we have got in Spain, we haven't got Santa Claus, we have the three magic kings. And everybody, at the age of 10 or 11, everybody knows the magic kings are the parents. But before not, before it's really magic. But to really make the whole process work, the magic, the parents have to know, it's not magic, we are the magic kings, and we give gifts every 6th of January. So that's maybe the main idea with magic, and I think also by giving gifts, there is some magic in it, because you see, okay, other people say it's magic, or my kids say it's magic, so it's not really either magic or going to make that whole magic clear, because I think software development is a very complex thing. Probably if it wouldn't be complex, it would be done by machines. So I think it's pretty interesting to see, there are different parts of it, and we understand it, but the whole picture will always be magic. It's probably, I don't know now. I think it's that idea we have to, we have to understand a little and go a little farther. So I don't know. Several views, probably the political view, the more technical view, the economic view, and if Rüdiger were here, the psychological views. We have got all the same data, and we see the data different. So that's maybe what's interesting about free software, that people from very different worlds come together and share something. Try to do so. We have some idea of the development of free software is better than proprietary software, but it's something we can't measure now. So if we can compare it with numbers, it would be interesting. That's a problem you will have probably when doing that. So, thanks for your attention.